Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of January 2019. Welcome to episode 44 of this podcast series. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which would make this pretty much the books I read during January. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost those on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts are not exactly spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists, and here there's a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. We heard from Michael Bradley. Hey, Alan. Hope you had a good Christmas and New Year's. Glad to hear someone else enjoys the True Believers books from Marvel. Being primarily a DC guy, I pick them up very occasionally and enjoy a dose of classic Marvel. Regarding the Jimmy Olsen book, I picked that up when it came out and don't have a lot of memories of it, unfortunately. Maybe I should take a second look. Now, of course, Michael, you're a fan of Jimmy Olsen as opposed to, you know, me, so your reactions may be different. The National Comics Eternity one-shot was one of a series of four one-shots that DC published in 2012, revisiting or updating minor DC properties. I have a soft spot for the character, but I really enjoyed the Rose and Thorn one, which I picked up off the stands. Madam X and Eternity I grabbed from the cheap bins. Good man, Michael, good man. I knew you had it in you. Michael says he has not crossed paths on the final one, Looker, but will grab it if he sees it cheap. It was kind of disappointing, though not surprising given the market for such things, that more did not come from the one-shots. They all felt like solid springboards for more. Thank you, Michael. Always good to hear from you. And from Sir Martin of Grey, faithful feedbacker and a really cool dude. Thanks for the end of year episode. It's always a highlight, even if I don't get why you do the stats as regard prices paid, what companies were read most, and so on. Given that what you read is, pull list apart, random, the annual results are never going to indicate patterns or trends. I admit, though, most comic fans seem to love lists and stats. I bet everyone else loves this stuff. Yeah, I think that was my former life as a certified public accountant coming through again there. Sir Martin says he managed just two issues of G. Willow Wilson's Wonder Woman. Superheroes fighting ersatz wars is a pet peeve of mine. It never works. It's not what they were created for. And the Nord art isn't for me. His Diana is too waif-like. Plus, I'm so sick of Wonder Woman doing her Xena tribute act with sword and skirt. Wonder Woman was an original, now she's generic. And you know, that is a great way to put that particular complaint, Sir Martin. I don't know how finding any issues of Superman Family can elicit any reaction other than a rapture. That is true. Of the new Vertigo books, I tried The Opening Giant, which didn't grab me, and The Books of Magic, which was deconstructed and utterly devoid of content. Pass. Congratulations to the Sutherlands and Nathaniel / Vera, but what will Ange do now that he's no longer Listener of the Year? He'll have to take it upon himself to recapture the crown. Upon? We all see what you did there, Sir Martin. And we heard from the aforementioned Ruth and Darren, Count and Countess. Thank you so much for the lovely fanfare, Professor Allen, and for the induction of Count and Countess into such a prestigious group. We are honored. We really enjoyed the analysis of the books you read over the year. It was interesting to learn how your books fell out by publisher, decade, and price point. Whoa. I hope this disagreement between the Sutherlands and Sir Martin doesn't end up in a duel. Most of the books that we read in 2018 were digital. We find that format is convenient for travel, and we don't have to find room for them. We still pick up some of our favorites like Aquaman or issues we want to get signed, like the Green Arrows with the Mike Grell variant covers. Of course, we were disappointed to see the Mike Grell variant covers on Green Arrow come to an end, and we like to imagine that ending those is what is now leading to that title being canceled. Darren read nearly 3,000 pages of Usagi Yojimbo while on business trips this year, and then continued to reread it when he got back home, for a grand total of close to 5,000 pages. Between us, our top reads include Chapel Town by Ron Randall, surprise, surprise, Section Zero by Carl Kiesel and Tom Grummet, all of the recent James Bond trades from the current run from Dynamite, the first two volumes of Captain Harlock and Queen Emeraldus from the beautiful new hardcover reprints, the current John Carter and Pellucidar series, and of course Usagi Yojimbo, as we said before, gets our most number of pages of a title read in a year. Regards, Countess Ruth and Count Darren. And old school Ross, referring to the Lancelot Link image I used on that episode, said, "Seriously, Professor, if you continue to monkey around like this, I'm only going to listen more in the new year." I commented that I hoped I could make 2019 more fun than a barrel of monkeys, to which he replied that he'd be bananas if that were the case. And from new feedbacker Sean Urbanski, "Professor Allen, I wanted to thank you for the Quartermen and Comics Reading Journal podcasts, which I've been enjoying for about a year and a half. I've also dipped into the Relatively Geeky archive and thoroughly enjoyed the all-star panel discussion on the comic book industry and the Watchmen anniversary episode with M. I had a couple of questions for you. I'm a Bronze Age Marvel enthusiast. I'd be interested to know how you characterize the Bronze Age, especially Marvel. When you think of a Bronze Age Marvel, what comes to mind? Also, I'm curious of your thoughts as a Doomologist on FF 361 in this Christmas issue. Doom seeks to cure mankind of drug addiction at the height of the crack epidemic, but is foiled by a bumbling thing. I kind of think by addressing a kitchen table issue like teen drug abuse, this shows Dr. Doom's genuine concern for us commoners. Your scholarly thoughts? Thank you again for the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. They enhance my enjoyment of comics. Sincerely, Sean." Great to hear from you, Sean. Appreciate the feedback and the appropriately reverent tone with which you spoke of Dr. Doom. Bronze Age for Marvel is a little tricky to diagnose, but for me, it's when Stan gives up the writing on most, if not all, of his titles, and he moves out to Hollywood or otherwise, becomes the company's frontman, the showman. But in terms of what I think of as emblematic of Marvel Bronze Age, it's the mid to late 70s stuff, like Star Wars and Power Man and ROM, books like that. And yes, I do have FF 361 in the Quarterbin database, and I will get to it some Christmas season for sure. As for the details of that plot, that's just Doom being Doom and the Thing being a bozo. Thanks for the feedback, everyone, especially Sean. Always good to get a new feedbacker. Totally appreciated. And now onto the books I read last month. As I do on this show, I'm categorizing the books that I read. And first are the issues I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. For Quarterbin Podcast 130, I read Uncle Scrooge Adventures 20. And it was awesome. And comics I read for listening to podcasts. To follow along with Aaron Moss's Headcast Network, I read Manhunter 21, part 4 of the 6-part Saints and Sinners storyline. Aaron covered this on episode 22 of the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. Adventures of Comics 528 and Superman 105. These are among the 25-cent books that I purchased over time to follow along with Podcasting's Michael Bailey and Jeffrey on From Crisis to Crisis. And it's great to drag books out of the FCTC drawer for listening along. The specific issues were covered on From Crisis to Crisis, episode 225. We have Jimmy Olsen covering live on TV, a team-up of Superman and Green Lantern. And then we move into the beginnings of the Trial of Superman storyline. And there was a podcast adjacent series I picked up from our LCS, World's Greatest Comics, a few months back. About 3 years ago, on Quarter Bin 66, I covered the somewhat confusing Tail Gunner Joe number 6, the final issue of that title. So when I saw the rest of the title for that same lovely price of just 2 bits, I couldn't resist. So I picked up Tail Gunner Joe 1 through 5. This did explain the background of the series a bit better, of a future in which a father and daughter are merged together into a robotic weapon to bring down the corporation that performed this vile experiment upon them. It's still a bit confusing and very weird, but I do think I appreciate more now, having read the whole thing, of what Peter Gillis and Tom Ardis were getting at with this series. And on to new comics that we read right off the shelves. Adventures of the Super Sons, number 6. When this miniseries started, I was not expecting that it would be a road trip through DC's Silver Age sci-fi stories, an era that I love. But when Space Cabbie appeared a few issues back, you figured anything was possible. So when Tommy Tomorrow shows up in this one, you just roll with it. I continue to enjoy this fun, albeit oddball, little series. Justice League Dark, number 7. This is a departure from the previous issue, sort of a transition issue maybe, or at least a weird downtime sort of thing. We have Man-Bat, who's basically serving as the host for a series of short stories about various weird DC characters, taking on the other kind and other aspects of their battle with the Upside Down Man. It was good to see Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, again. And even Andrew Bennett, a.k.a. iVampire, got a shout-out. Wonder Woman 61 and 62. You remember what Sir Martin of Grey said about not being able to stick with the G. Willow Wilson books? I sort of hear him. One of the problems a book can have when it runs through writer after writer is that an idea might be new to that writer, but it doesn't mean it's new to the reader. And that's what's going on in this arc, because this is about the gods coming to Earth. In this case, Ares and Aphrodite, and about what effects that will have on humans. I did like the Aphrodite character and her own doubts about her power and how she's intrigued by Steve Trevor. But the concept, the overall story, battling Ares, I feel like I've seen that a lot in the last number of years. Even the conversations with Ares, which hit interesting themes of war and peace, while good, those really weren't enough to lift these issues up too high. I'm sticking with the title, but I can't promise for how long that's going to be. And from the good folks at Alterna, provider of new comics at the awesome price of $1.50, I read Midnight Mystery, number 2, in which we seem to solve the case involving the secret son of a deceased horror movie host. Except for the last 2 pages, where the deceased horror host uses the TV to speak to the son, and it seems like the dad is preparing his comeback, shall we say. It was good, but the highlight of the issue was the mock hostess ad for Monster Munchies. And on to the general comic reading that I did. Dr. Anthony, the engineer, sent a package around New Year's Day with a bunch of cool books in it, such as Backways number 2 from Aftershock. I read number 1 last year. Anna has disappeared into the Backways to find her friend, and this issue she learns her way around and finds a guide who may or may not be trustworthy. This was a good follow-up, but I do hope that next issue they get back to the plot of actually trying to find the friend. and the first part of a five-part miniseries from 2017, again from Alterna. I read Amazing Age number 1. This is the story of a high school kid who, when he was in junior high, created comic books with him and his buddies as superpowered characters. At the end of this issue, at the end of number 1, they're drawn to another world to battle alongside Bladehawk, one of the characters he created. It's a fun premise, and the story includes some pages of those stories drawn as a 12-year-old would draw homemade comics. So there are different types of art in there, which is also a nice touch. Dr. Anthony also sent the book Epic from Free Comic Book Day 2014 from Comics Tribe. This was a solid young kid gets powers and doesn't know how to control them story. Like a lot of Free Comic Book Day books, this one shows a lot of potential, but those don't always turn into successful, long-running titles. And longtime friend of the network, Ron Sadowski, one of the very earliest members of the hashtag Comic Book Circle of Life, also sent a care package during the holiday season, and that included Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 12 from 1990. So yes, this was the David Hasselhoff version of Fury. This is the start of a three-part Fury versus Madame Hydra story, and I like the way that both of those characters were developed. That added depth to the storyline, and that's just something that doesn't always happen. He also sent Savage Sword of Conan 33 from the Black and White magazine era. The magazine was falling apart and had some, let's say, extra inks on the cover, if you know what I mean. And to me, that just means the book was well read and well loved before it made its way to me. This had two full-length stories, a Conan story by Roy Thomas and Gene Colan, which was beautiful, and it had a Solomon Kane story, which is a character I haven't seen a lot of before, but this story really did intrigue me. And I got a book from Sir Martin of Grey, which means it's a book from the 2000s. JSA All-Stars from 2010. This is Power Girl, Star Girl, Hourman, Atom Smasher, and that crowd. The main story wrapped up in this issue with some good action, but I like the second story more, Liberty Bell and Hourman and Icicle doing some globe-trotting adventuring looking for a series of artifacts. Very enjoyable. And from the great Kanzen Greg Arujo, I read Marvel Adventures Fantastic Four number 0. This is an all-age book from 2005, and of course, since it is the first issue of an FF title, guess who has to be present? Of course, Doom! Because as we've said many, 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 many times, Doom doesn't need the FF. But the FF certainly needs Doom. In this one, Doom is portrayed as being tricked by Sue Storm, when obviously allowing her to believe that she's tricked him is just part of his long-term seduction plan. But other than that, it was a pretty fun read. Greg also sent the most 70s of all DC comics ever, Richard Dragon, Kung Fu Fighter number 16, from 1977. This is Richard and his buddy Ben Turner in the Arctic, fighting bunches of evildoers, including some with super sharp ice skates as weapons. So, drama! Greg also sent Teen Titans Spotlight 21 from 1988. This was an interesting one, hearkening back to the team's 1960s origins with a hippie guy who had some bad luck at Woodstock trying to make his way in the modern world and just not quite fitting in. It was a strange, weird, but kind of cool story, I think. And Sir Iowa's Joe sent in some books recently, including the manga book Tenchi Myo Ryo Oki's Day, number 6. Forgive the pronunciation. This was the final issue of the storyline, which helped me understand the plot a bit, but I mostly let the art tell the story, and kind of surprising for my tastes, the manga art didn't take me out of the story. And from the generous Canadian Rob Lance, I read Daredevil 127 from 1975. It's Daredevil versus the Torpedo. Although the original Torpedo is dead, maybe at the hands of the guy who's now in the Torpedo costume, I think. It was a heck of a fight scene that lasted most of the last half of the issue. The last 6 or 7 pages of that was a fight in a single suburban house. And the fight ends when they realize just how much they've terrorized that family, which is a pretty great ending, actually. And some of the kids' books that I read, some from Sir Rob's care package, some from the Black Friday sale at World's Greatest Comics, and some from Ron Sadowski. Included Betty and Veronica, 261 and 266, Winnie the Pooh, 16, Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, 70, Walt Disney's Alice in Wonderland, Everything's Archie, 121, and Archie Giant Series, 554. Now, Betty and Veronica, 261, was an important issue. This is from 2012, and it was the first appearance of Vampironica and Betty the Vampire Slayer. The concept was rebooted last year as one of the latest entrants in Archie's horror line of books. And also, the Alice in Wonderland book is worth a mention, as it covers the entire story in one 30-page issue. And that's impressive. And here I want to give a shout-out to Scout Comics and the podcast Drawn and Paneled, co-hosted by our old buddy Jason Marcinet. On that show recently, they had a contest, and I won! And my prize was a handful of comics from Scout Comics. And in January, I read 3 of those. These were all initial issues of series. Long Live Pro Wrestling 0, Mindbender 1, and Monarchs 1. Typical of Scout's offerings, this is a nice variety of books. A real-world book, at least so far. A horror fantasy, and a sci-fi book. I like variety in comic books. The notion that comics are a medium, not a genre. So that aspect of Scout Comics really works for me. There's also a very distinctive aspect to these books in terms of their production values. Each of the books is similar. They're smaller, only 6 internal sheets, making for 24 pages. But they only have 2 house ads, so it's still 22 pages of story. And the pages are very high quality, slick, glossy, thick paper. And that makes them really stand out among the smaller publishers. The pages are almost as thick as the covers. So it's a very interesting business choice. That side of the comics business, the business side, always intrigues me. And so when a company tries something different, I try to note that. As far as the stories, the issues go, if you like pro wrestling, you'll probably like Long Live Pro Wrestling. There's an aspect of living the gimmick, which is intriguing. I think I like the premise of Mindbender the best, a guy who's in an asylum because he manifested crazy powers in his youth with deadly results. And there's a new counselor working with him, but he may just be using her to get out. Great premise, really well executed in this first issue. Again, that was Mindbender number 1. Thanks again to Jason and his co-host George on Drawn and Paneled, and thanks to Scout Comics. We're taking a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read in January.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at 2TrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read in January. I covered three issues of Deathlok with the great Kanzen Grigorujo way back in Quarterbin 100, and mentioned that those were probably the only three issues of that title I'd ever read. And now, thanks to Ron Sadowski, I can up that number to five issues, as I read Deathlok 2 and 8 from 1991, and these ones were really playing with that premise of the pacifist stuck inside the cyborg killing machine, but it's starting to get into that 90s style of comics, and these Deathlok issues just tend to come up a little short for my tastes. And between Ron Sadowski and the world's greatest comics Quarterbins, I picked up and read Fool Killer 2 through 6 from the 1990 run. These issues are all credited as by Steve Gerber, J.J. Birch, and Tony DiZuniga. That wording makes me wonder how heavily involved Gerber was in the scripting beyond the broad plot outlines, or whether he did in fact write the scripts. The story is wild enough that it could have been Gerber. I don't doubt that. This is one of those titles that's partly a parody of the Punisher-type, over-the-top vigilante character, but it's also a pretty faithful telling of that type of story featuring that type of character. The gist of it is that we have a guy who is inspired by the original Fool Killer, who is currently under psychiatric care, and they manage to connect, to communicate, and the current guy, a down-on-his-luck fella barely making ends meet, decides to continue the original Fool Killer's mission of killing fools, and things get messy. It's a weirdly compelling story. Interestingly done, I will give it that. I read the second volume of a storyline I found a few months ago, Rivers of London, Volume 2, Night Witch, 1 through 5. In this one, we have the daughter of a powerful Russian oligarch being disappeared from her London home, apparently taken by a mythical forest creature fresh out of Russian legend. Peter Grant, a London police officer who's one of the two members of the Supernatural Squad, is brought in to investigate. And to make sure he takes the investigation seriously, Grant's boss, Nightingale, is also kidnapped. And from there, things get even more tangled and complicated in many, many ways. Nothing is as it seems. This storyline is a terrific combination of old world mysticism, Cold War spy stuff, and modern politics. I've really loved both of the volumes of this that I've read. Big props to Ben Aronovich for writing some solid comics, a great combination of gritty and supernatural. And I completed another series that I started a few months back via the Hoopla digital app, Betty and Veronica, Vixens, 6 through 10. This is a crazy alternate universe story featuring all the girls of Riverdale as a motorcycle gang. In this one, they rumble with other gangs, protect their turf, and then get involved in a human trafficking ring. They show their toughness, their compassion, their friendship, and their ability to put the smackdown on whoever needs it whenever they need it. You have to like Elseworlds and What Ifs, that type of story, to like this, because it does not fit into any version of the Archieverse, including the Riverdale TV show, although that's probably the closest in terms of vibe and type of story being told. But this is something all of its own, with a girl power overlay that, for me, pretty much works. I'm glad they didn't keep this as an ongoing, but wrapped it up with these 10 issues. This is the way to do this kind of alternate universe story. You tell your story, and when you're done, you end your story. During our Christmas travels to visit family, we managed to spend a few hours with the kind and lovely Sutherlands of the R&D Adventures Podcast Network. And as part of the exchanging of gifts, I ended up with a trade paperback, collecting a Dark Horse series from the early 1990s, Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan, The Beckoning, 1-7. This was a solid story with a little bit of African magic happening, which put Tarzan in the modern age, dealing with the modern issue of ivory poaching. But the origin was right out of Burroughs, which most of the classic movies ignore. I like that, the idea of him teaching himself how to read after his parents' death, and being taken in and nursed by an ape woman. In this one, he finds himself torn between his allegiance to the jungle and the protection of the elephants, and his love for and commitment to Jane. There's a lot of stuff going on in this series, and I dug it a lot. And reading that led me to search Hoopla for other Tarzan comic series, and I ended up reading a Bill Willingham series that pulled together Tarzan and bunches of other Burroughs characters into one story, The Greatest Adventure, 1-9. I've read some Tarzan and some John Carter, so I knew the leads and side characters from those properties. But most of these characters were unfamiliar to me. The Oskaloosa Kid, The Rider, Barney and Victoria Custer, Ulysses Paxton, and more! But if there's one thing that Bill Willingham knows how to do, it's take a bunch of already existing characters and figure out how to write a compelling story, giving all those characters their individual chances to shine. Not that this is exactly Fables, but the similarities certainly did strike me. This was a really fun read. Tarzan is the leader of the expedition, which is in pursuit of a powerful gemstone called the Eye of Judgment, which could power a world-killing death ray. They battle an alien battleship, visit Mars and Pellucidar, and they just do what great adventurers do. They have a great adventure. We have friendships grow, romances, battles, betrayal, lessons learned, and victory. A fun story all the way around. In his most recent care package, Dr. Anthony the Engineer sent the first issue of a series that was a follow-up effort to a book from 2017 Free Comic Book Day. And I liked it so much, I picked up some more from Hoopla. So I read Summit, numbers 1-9 from Lion's Forge. In the near future, 5 astronauts are tasked with stopping an asteroid from hitting the Earth. Something goes wrong, and although successful, 4 of the 5 heroes perish in the attempt. This is the story of the one who survived. Rays from the asteroid gave the survivor, our hero Valentina, some energy-based powers, and her super smart science colleagues built her a suit to contain and direct those powers. And then it becomes a corporate espionage story, and the entire arc wraps up and sets up the next batch of issues very well. And not to get all super SJW on y'all, I did like that this was a story with a diverse cast, a couple of female leads, including a businesswoman from Mexico, and it portrayed really smart people at MIT in similar places way better than the Big Bang Theory ever has, including poking fun here and there at their occasional social denseness. A very enjoyable, independent comic book. Dr. Anthony, who I am now naming the official sponsor of this episode, Dr. Anthony the Engineer also sent 3 issues of a series from Aspen Comics from 2011, Dead Man's Run, 0, 1, and 2. In the first issue, issue 0, writer Greg Pak explains the concept of the series in 3 words, 3 words that Ben Roberts from Valhalla Motion Pictures mentioned to him once, jailbreak from hell. And that is the idea. There is a jail that has a literal portal to hell in it, and an elite team is tasked to get someone out. Crazy premise, good art, okay characters. But it was a fun read, and Greg Pak is a professional. He knows how to tell a solid comic book story. From the cheap bins at World's Greatest Comics, I picked up 3 more Valiant books from the 90s, which I hope pleases Luke Giaconetti very much. largely on his recommendation. I picked up Eternal Warrior 12, 14, and 18, and pretty much really enjoyed these. I like the idea that these stories can take place anywhere, anytime, and even when there is an overarching storyline or quest, each issue is so different from the others in terms of the setting and the action that they end up being pretty satisfying reads. Sir I Was Joe sent a bunch of comics in recently, including every book from Epic's Shadowline imprint. And I read the entirety of the comic books last year, but Sir I Was Joe also sent in the trade paperback series that wrapped up Shadowline. I didn't finish them all this month, but I did read Critical Mass 1 through 3. Now, the whole line is about a small society of powerful beings who had lived for millennia unnoticed by humans. And by the time we get to this series, the concept was to bring all the characters together, each still with their own priorities and goals and missions, and tell the climax of those stories. So in these issues, we get more into the character of Dr. Zero, who is doing good deeds just for publicity, and as part of a long-term plan, a long con, really, with the end of subjugating humanity, with St. George and the others doing their best to save humanity. And all the while, some good character work is going on. These were pretty decent reads. I expect to wrap up these, and thus wrap up all of Shadowline soon, maybe even next month. I also read Mech 1 and 3, the first and last issue, of a series from Homage Studios written by Warren Ellis. We go by the saying here that if you're going to skip one issue of a three-issue series, the middle one is the one to miss. And that's probably the case here. As with issues 1 and 3, I was able to figure out mostly what was happening. We're in the near future, where massive enhancement culture, called mech, is on the rise, and that involves adding cybernetic implants to humans, making us all cyborgs. But there's also a black market in mech, and the founder of the movement, a celebrity in the mech culture, tries to clean up that black market, tries to clean up the scene, while also investigating the death of her former lover, another mech pioneer. Good story, good plot, a lot going on, and good world building. I like science fiction in my comic books, and I dug these issues. Last episode, I read an annual from DC that combined all of their TSR properties. And in various cheap boxes since then, I found a bunch more of those books, including, from World's Greatest Comics, Spelljammer 1 through 3. I liked the mix of sci-fi and fantasy here, and I think they worked in the D&D aspects of spells and such pretty well. Barbara Kiesel wrote it, and her steady professional hand helps shape this into a narrative that pretty much makes sense. You have two races forced to work together, which is a common premise, but there are enough interesting things in the plots and characters to make this different, to make it stand apart, and to make it appealing. And I enjoyed that so much that between Cheap Bins and Hoopla, I was able to read a related TSR book, Forgotten Realms 1 through 13, which is about half of that series. These first opening storylines are basically a wizard, a paladin, and a cleric walk into a comic book. We have a missing magical artifact and lands in danger from dragons. But things are not as they seem, partly because of the shapeshifters, and partly because, well, that's just how stories go. As the series moves on, we get a couple one-off stories, mostly on the funny side, or at least leaning that way. And there you also get character building, which you don't always get in the more traditional quest-based stories. There are limitations to what you can do in this genre of storytelling. There's certain expectations. But within those limitations, Forgotten Realms was able to tell some interesting comic book series. I do have the rest of the series and will read them later in the year, but this batch I really enjoyed. And all throughout this, Rags Morales' art completely holds up. And as an aside, I met Morales at last year's Heroes Con, and he's one of the nicest, kindest artists out there and told some really interesting stories. And here, early in his career, working on Forgotten Realms You could see the spark of his talent, the greatness that was coming. And more Hoopla stuff from DC. I read a collection of one-shots leading up to the events, or non-events, of Batman 50. Batman Preludes to the Wedding. These are five loosely connected one-shots about the events leading up to the big day. The Joker really wants an invitation, but can't seem to get one no matter how hard he tries. Each of these issues features a one-on-one battle. Robin versus Ra's al Ghul, Batgirl versus Riddler, Anarchy versus Red Hood, Nightwing versus Hush, and then Joker versus Harley. These were each mostly pretty good stories, managing to tell their fights in the context of events related to the upcoming wedding, like bachelor and bachelorette parties, tuxedo fittings, that sort of thing. And I think that's everything. This may end up being the shortest comics reading journal in a year or two. I'll have to check that. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, I like some of those Batman wedding preludes. Rivers of London, that's a very enjoyable series. Betty and Veronica Vixens was a crazy read, and I like the different take in Justice League Dark number 7. Forgotten Realms was way better than I expected. But in terms of a favorite read of the month, Summit was the best series I read, start to finish. And of those issues, I'm going to go with the setup issue. It did a great job of keeping me reading. So Summit number 1, best read of the month. Now next month, this podcast is going to be participating in the network-wide crossover event. So I'm going to be reading a ton of books related to that. But I can't tell you now what that is. That would be spoilers. But whatever I do read, I will be here to talk about all of those books that I read in February in an episode that ought to be out sometime in early March. So feel free to let me know what you think of the episode, what you think of any of the books that I mentioned, especially if you've read any. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast@blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relativelygeek, and of course the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.